Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Garrett Moon, the CEO and co-founder of CoSchedule, the marketing calendar and suite of related tools designed to help marketers and content professionals stay organized and scale their processes. Garrett is also the author of his recent book, 10X Marketing Formula, creating competition-free content that stands out and gets results. Today, CoSchedule generates over $5 million in annual recurring revenue, boasts over 8,000 paying customers, and reaches 400,000 subscribers on their blog. But the company had very humble beginnings. Garrett and his co-founder Justin started working on the idea for a marketing calendar application back in 2013 while they were running a design agency together. They tinkered on this project during the late hours of the night after their families went to sleep, finessing the technical skills they'd need in order to put together a minimum viable product of their idea, and finally in September of 2013, they launched. The next year, they took on a small round of funding, began growing their team, and investing a massive amount of time and resources into high-quality, in-depth content for their blog. And, well, the rest is history. In this episode, Garrett and I talk about how he and his co-founder went from idea to sketching out and building a minimum viable product in the hours outside of running their own agency full-time. We dig into the content marketing strategies, tactics, and ideas that have helped CoSchedule generate millions of readers, over 400,000 email subscribers, and the ways in which they convert those blog readers into paying customers of their product. We cover Garrett's best advice for transitioning from selling your services to scaling a SaaS business, the best investment he's ever made in growing his business, and so much more. Real quick, before we dive into this episode, I was actually traveling while I interviewed Garrett, so you'll notice throughout the conversation that there are a few small glitches where our internet connection was a bit spotty, but it isn't that bad, and it really doesn't take any away from the substance of this awesome conversation. And as always, we talked about a ton of great resources in this interview, of which you'll be able to find everything we mention in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Garrett Moon. Garrett, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Excited to be here.
All right. So the first question I want to ask you, I've been asking to all of my guests here on the show, is what book are you reading right now, or what's been your favorite recently?
Well, right now I'm actually reading Rand Fishkin's book, Lost and Flounder, I believe is what it's called. That's been an interesting read. And always nice to hear kind of war stories from guys that have been in the trenches. So that's been really interesting. Also, diving back into predictable revenue, which I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of and read. It's an oldie, but a goodie. So going back through that one.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a really good one. But I got to add Rand's book to my list as well.
But
we're here to talk about you, not Rand Fishkin. So Garrett, I actually want to go back to the early days with you. So I know that your company, CoSchedule, is currently the fastest growing startup in North Dakota. And I have it on good authority that you're from a small town of about 3,000 people in the state. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yes. Not 1,000, 3,000. So 3,000 is much, much bigger. There are many 1,000 person towns in Dakota. So yeah.
So what is home for you?
It's a little town called Beulah. It's a coal mining town. So actually a lot of power plants, coal mines, and of course agriculture and farming in the area too. But that's it. And in North Dakota. So not a lot of startups from our area or that neck of the woods.
Sure. What did your parents do when you were growing up? Were they involved in local industries?
Yeah, my dad worked in the coal industry. My mom had various administrative jobs and teaching jobs. So yes, my dad was a power plant operator, actually. So this is we can get really deep on this, at a Synfuels plant. So they actually turn coal into natural gas, which is quite a fascinating process, apparently, if you're a chemist. I'm not, so I can't elaborate past that. But
did you ever work with him growing up at all?
I did work out there, various summer jobs, you know, cutting grass, painting parking lot lines, you know, really good stuff like that. Mm.
Fun stuff.
The good fun stuff. Yeah.
Can you remember the very first product, service, or, you know, whatever you would consider a business of your own that you personally worked on?
I mean, lots of them. You know, of course, the lemonade stands, selling magazines, selling, I think, like wrapping paper or something, just different products like that. In high school, though, I made a petition to be the editor of our school newspaper. And this was back in the day where they actually still you know, rolled on newspaper using this wax process. So like you had like this grid with, you put a light layer of wax on it, and then you'd actually lay out the newspaper by like printing out articles and then like rolling them onto this wax paper. They would then be photographed and turned into negatives, and it was like a super arcane process. Mm-hmm. So I ran for office to be the editor, and my goal was to convert it to a whole digital process. We moved it all to Adobe PageMaker, helped lobby the school board for a computer lab. We got 30 computers, I think, purchased to do it. And while it wasn't really a business venture, it was one of those things where I wasn't always worried about business as much as I was always interested in building things and making things and, you know, kind of taking on these efforts to make them a success. And so that was kind of one big one. I did also started a fitness center, and we had this area where we could kind of convert it into this laser tag. So again, petitioning the board for funding, started this laser tag, and I think we had made like $300 our very first night we were open. So it was pretty neat little venture that we started.
Yeah, and I feel like especially with the paper, that's a little bit of foreshadowing. You have a background in design, which is also very clear to me from just how well CoSchedule is designed, both visually and from a user experience standpoint. So what sent you down the path of studying and eventually taking your first job in design?
Again, I think it's just making stuff, right? I mean, for me, design and you know, development and writing code and stuff all became just vehicles. I wasn't necessarily long-term, like ultra passionate about being a graphic designer or a necessarily developer, but I learned them as a necessity, right? Like learned them as a way to make ideas and things that I wanted to see come to life. And so for me, going into college, design and marketing, which I both studied, became sort of just the vehicle, necessary vehicles you had to have in order to get ideas out there. And that's kind of what I took them on. I also taught myself coding just as a means to an end versus a necessarily the lifestyle or the business that I wanted to be in long term.
Right. Complementary skill set, no matter what you want to do, essentially, if you can hack together something basic yourself, right?
For sure. Yep. You can make it all happen. So I remember learning Flash. I was a designer, so my first bit of coding was in Macromedia Flash, and learning Flash in like a weekend by going through like a book page to page and eating and sleeping very little. And because I had a project that I wanted to use it on, I had this idea, you know, for this interactive type site, and I had no idea how to do anything else. So there's just some basic HTML. So I thought, hey, why not Flash? And actually, it turns out to be a lot like JavaScript, so it transitioned really nicely overall. But yeah, it's just a means to an end in many cases.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a good example too. You mentioned of, you know, where you're learning a skill with a very explicit purpose in mind as you're learning it, versus just say, "I want to learn Flash because I want to learn Flash." But no, you actually wanted to build something.
Right. And I think, you know, that ends up being the case for a lot of entrepreneurs. Is once you see a problem that you want to solve, or you see an opportunity that you want to take advantage of, I think the thing that really ends up distinguishing those entrepreneurs that can kind of really get past to be successful are the ones that see those just as problems, right? I think a lot of times we're able to say, hey, I'm not a designer, I'm not a developer, or I don't have technical skills as a barrier. And I think you have to learn to kind of see it as a problem that you have to figure out how to solve rather than a barrier. And that solution may very well be hiring somebody or finding a co-founder or those types of things. Or in some cases, it might just be rolling up your sleeve and learning how to do the basics well enough to get by for a certain period of time, right? To at least prove your idea. And so it's just like starting to see that shift from barrier to problem that is solvable is a really important step for entrepreneurs to make.
I agree. I love that framing. But Garrett, I want to fast forward up to today. So you're the CEO and co-founder of CoSchedule, which as a content marketer myself, I'm very familiar with. But for our listeners here today, can you explain in your own words what exactly the tool does for your customers?
Yeah, well, we really think of ourselves as a calendar, an editorial and marketing calendar that gives, you know, anybody running their own business and doing what I was just talking about, right? Doing the marketing that it's required to make your business work and thrive. Or if you're working professionally in the marketing trade, what CoSchedule does is it gives you a single calendar for you to plan out your entire marketing process. That means when you're going to publish blog posts, when you're going to publish your podcasts, videos, whatever. Just see it all in one place. So you can schedule your content, schedule your email marketing campaigns, schedule all of your social media right in that one calendar. And then when you hit publish and when you hit go, we actually integrate with a lot of the core tools that you use every single day. So like WordPress and all the major social networks, MailChimp, you know, ActiveCampaign, you know, whatever the tool you're using. And we actually communicate directly with those tools and help you make those things go live. So what we really try to do is take the annoying, frustrating parts that come with marketing, the tedious things that happen on a day-to-day basis, and try to make them as easy as possible so that you can spend your time doing other things, whether that's growing your business or if you're in the marketing trade, you're a marketing professional, it might be creating more content, it might be optimizing your content more to get better results. So it's really about separating the stuff you don't want to do from the stuff that really gives you results and makes you feel accomplished and successful in your day.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of people, or maybe I guess size of organizations, are the best fit to get the most value out of CoSchedule today?
Yeah, I think you need to be doing a certain amount of marketing already, right? Or really be seeing your marketing as a core piece of your business. We really serve businesses. But that doesn't mean we don't have individuals. It doesn't necessarily mean you have a team. We do have an essential plan that starts at pretty low price at $50 a month. That works really well for solopreneurs and individual businesses. And we also do a lot with like recycling social media messages and repeating that content. So just trying to get as much as you can out of the time you have to put into marketing. But a lot of our business has shifted towards marketing teams and professional organizations that have, in-house marketing teams of 5 to 6 people where they're publishing content, trying to organize campaigns, and they need to be doing a lot of communication and internal work and documentation about what they're doing.
Well, I can imagine that has actually probably changed as you guys have grown over the years. So, when you first started working on the business back in 2013, what was the original vision of the product?
What CoSchedule's become. We started, the very first demos we gave were actually of mock-ups that I made in Photoshop, built in a keynote presentation that was kind of like had these fancy animations that kind of looked like working software. Like we didn't code anything. We just kind of faked it using PowerPoint basically. That vision included content plus email marketing plus social. It included this concept of an all-in-one editorial and marketing calendar plus, powerful social publishing and powerful integrations into your WordPress and whatever, tools that you're using. But the scope of what we could actually build was a different story, right? We couldn't build all of that in day one. We didn't go seek funding in order to build our initial product. So we started out with a very limited scope of that. We started out with a WordPress plugin, a nice, really nice calendar, and social media scheduling. And those were the three kind of core components. And we kind of said, hey, we help you with your blog plus social media. And we wrapped in this nice all-in-one tool. And I think I'm not sure exactly how long it was, but at least 18 months of operation, we were a WordPress-only tool. If you didn't have WordPress, you couldn't use CoSchedule at all. And that was sort of a way for us to start proving the market, right? Proving that people wanted the product we sold. And so we're only building a limited set of it, and we're focusing on a very, very specific audience. Limiting ourselves to the WordPress audience allowed us to target a certain set of group users, right? It made it even easier for us to actually find customers than it was kind of opening it wide up, and then allowed us to get better at it and understand what they wanted, understand what they needed, what problems are really solving for them, and then build the product slowly over time and get better. So it's sort of that there's always that compromise between your big vision and like what you can actually deliver right now and how you can improve it over time. So that's sort of our entry into the market was just WordPress and social media.
Yeah, but I think that's a really smart approach too. And I actually remember when you guys were just a WordPress-only related tool. And during those days, the very early days, were you guys working on CoSchedule as a side project, or did you all sort of quit your jobs and go all in right away?
No, it was sort of a, I mean, I would say CoSchedule was a side project that me and my co-founder, Justin, were taking on since before it was even called CoSchedule. I mean, we worked at an advertising agency together. He was an engineer and developer, and I was, one of the art directors there. And we just got to talking over lunch and started building software on the side in the evening. We'd come home, have supper with our family, tuck them all in and put on a pot of coffee at 10 p.m. and start writing software and building tools. And some of those were useful, I mean, commercially useful, like we could actually sell them, but most of them were, just kind of fun projects that allowed us to write code and experiment with UI, user experience, how to onboard people, how to market them. We learned a lot that way and drank a lot of coffee and probably lost a lot of, a few years off our life in lack of sleep, but it was where it started. And eventually all that became, hey, let's just cut out this ad agency and run our own service business. So we ended up starting our own web and marketing consultancy company called Today Made, which we ran for about 4 or 5 years. But that marketing company actually became the place where we built CoSchedule. So we ended up having some customers and clients that we were teaching them how to do content marketing. We were teaching them how to use email and social, and running into the same problems that we were, that, there's so many tools and tabs and spreadsheets and, paper calendars and like all these random things that I have to keep in line in order to do all of this. So our customers, we were trying to scale it and the tool set was frustrating. We were using our blog and email as our primary marketing channel. And so it all kind of led together into, we started to see this problem in publishing and content creation that led us to start exploring, solving it with CoSchedule.
Garrett, one thing I really want to do is highlight what you just said, because this is a very common trend I see with a lot of the people I've interviewed on this show, especially those who get into software as a service related businesses, is that they have some sort of service-based company, often an agency or a freelancing business before they launch a tool. And you kind of use that as a platform for figuring out what your customers need as far as a potential tool. And then you kind of have your like first customers baked into it as well.
Right.
So going to those, very early days, do you remember who your very first paying customer was with CoSchedule?
Yeah. Well, actually, I think the biggest misconception with how you can transition from client, or service to product company is baked right into your question, because there's this sort of assumption that when you have an agency or you have a service business, you can actually use your service clients to test to sell the initial variation of your product. And I think, and we had products like that at CoSchedule. We actually had an old social media dashboard style tool that we tried to sell to our customers, and we had a very customized content management system that we sold to them. And I think the biggest difference in CoSchedule was that we actually didn't build it with the idea of selling it to our service-based clients. In fact, I think there's probably only one that ever even utilized it. And the reason for that is when you're selling a SaaS solution, when you're selling a product, you're selling it at a fraction of the price that it takes to develop that product, right? Like we started out at $10 or $20 a month, and we've got a piece of software that probably costs a few hundred thousand dollars in development hours and time and marketing to build. And so scale is your friend. Like you have to be able to scale customers in order for that product to be successful. And the reality is that's the exact diametrically opposed goal of a service business, which is probably as few customers as possible paying you as many dollars as possible to do a certain amount of work, right? You want the highest possible hourly rate you can to maximize profitability. So like those two models just absolutely do not work together. So I think like when you try to bake them together, it doesn't work and it doesn't scale, and it probably limits your ability to eventually scale the product you're building. So I think you have to really watch out for that. Instead, what I would do is think about your service company as a funding source, right? It's a funding source for starting your SaaS platform or your SaaS company or whatever you're working on, or your subscription business or your product, but it's not where sales are going to happen. In fact, you're better off trying to find 100 customers somewhere else so that you can really prove the idea. You know, when you have a customer from a service business, they hire you for thousands of dollars worth of work, tens of thousands of dollars worth of work, because they trust you. And there's a deep level of trust with you. So they have trust with you as an individual or your account manager or whoever's doing that versus a product. They don't really require that same amount of trust. And by the way, this client trusts you. So you can pretty much convince them to do just about anything if you spend enough time at it. So it's also not a very good validation strategy. They have too much personal trust with you already for them to be a good person to validate. You need to be able to sell that product to somebody who doesn't know you, doesn't trust you, doesn't believe a word that you say, but you have to figure out how to convince them to buy something. So there's a lot more there, but I think, you know, keeping those two ideas very separate is really important in the beginning.
That's a great point. Do you remember who your first customer was?
Yeah, I do. I actually don't remember his name or the name of his blog, but about beer, about microbreweries. And he was our very first paying customer. And he's been a customer. He's probably still in there. He was, at least I know at like the 3 or 4 year point, he was still a customer. And we sent him a huge box of like free stuff because I was like, hey, did you know you're our first customer? Like, here's 50 t-shirts and 100 stickers. Thanks for being awesome.
Okay, so Garrett, as a tool for content marketers, it's only fitting that you guys are, of course, pros at content marketing. And earlier this year, you also released your book, 10X Marketing Formula, and that sort of talks people through some of the ways that you've used what you call competition-free content to grow co-schedule. Yep. So can you tell us what exactly competition-free content is?
Yeah, I mean, the book really takes, you know, two real key ideas that we've used. And what I try to do with the book is kind of make it so that we're not just giving you like, here's how CoSchedule did it, you can copy it. But you certainly use the CoSchedule story and how we grew our blog and our content, our inbound marketing funnel from zero to like, you know, 400 plus thousand subscribers, I think nowadays. And like how we did that, we give you all the details. But more importantly, I give some frameworks that we used. I think as founders, we tend to think in these simple frameworks that create repeatable success and repeatable results. So I think it's really helpful to people starting businesses to kind of simplify in that way. And one of those frameworks was competition-free content. And what it really is about starting to see marketing efforts, the marketing that you're doing to promote your business in the same lens that you would see the product that you're creating. When you build a product, you're thinking about, okay, who are my competitors? Who's building a similar product to mine? And what are their key differentiating factors from us, right? Are they really focused on speed? Are they really focused on simplicity? Are they really focused on complexity and customization and high prices, right? So like, what's our angle? What's going to be the thing that differentiates us as a product? In marketing, in particular, once you start to get in the realm of creating content as a marketing channel, you have to realize that your content is in competition with other content. Now, that content may be being produced by your top competitors, right? Of course, there's the content that's outside of that realm, like, you know, Netflix or TV. That's content as well. But, you know, here we're focusing more on the content that's created by your competitors. So competition-free content is about using this whole process to identify the things that your competitors are doing, the things that they're using to market themselves, what types of content they're creating, how long is that content, what is that content doing for its audience? Is it solving a problem? Is it methodology? Is it actionable, right? Like, there's a lot of different ways you can look at it, and starting to find ways to actually have your marketing differentiate itself from what your competitors are doing. And I think it's one of those things where we think, oh, okay, well, in order to grow a business, I'm going to need a blog and I'm going to need to have a podcast. I'm going to need to have an email newsletter. And that's probably all true, but you also need to figure out, how does my blog differentiate itself? Like, how does my blog actually attract traffic and take traffic away from my competitor's blog or my competitor's podcast or my competitor's email list? How do I become the one that actually gets their attention and not just the one, just not just another company that has a blog and an email list? And so competition-free content, there's a bunch of different tools and mechanisms that we use, and the book really unpacks it, you know, over several chapters. But it's really about finding that differentiating driver for your business. Every single business is different. That allows you to really achieve that growth. Because unless you find that competition-free angle, you're going to have a hard time growing that audience and really building your business at scale.
I couldn't agree more. So we're going to include, for everyone listening, we're going to include the link to that book in the show notes for this episode. But Garrett, I have a couple of last quick questions for you. I've designed them to be intentionally short on my end. Your responses do not need to be equally so.
Okay.
What would be your single best piece of advice to someone who's listening today that wants to take their side hustle and turn it into a full-time business?
Well, I think there's probably something, you know, there's always these certain things that you need to invest in. I think one example is me and my business partner, we started our business. We both worked out of our basement, which, you know, the commute was great, but ultimately it limited our ability to succeed in some ways, right? And now that has certainly changed. If your business is online, you can probably work in your basement more than you could when we were trying to run like a local agency. But my story is we rented an office, we made it look like a nice office, we put a sign out front, and like the quantity and the quality of the business and the clients that we could take on like quadrupled overnight. So that's not the point. The point is there's probably something in the back of your mind that can really multiply your business. And I would say my advice is, you know, follow that. I think most early entrepreneurs on side hustles in particular wait too long to make big investments, and you probably should do it sooner.
What's the best investment you feel you've ever made in the context of growing your business? And this could be in the form of time, money, tools, product, services, education, or otherwise.
Email list. 100% our email list. We started building an email list at TodayMade, and that email list was over 10,000 by the time we started building CoSchedule. And without it, we don't have the first 300 customers in 4 months that helped us lead to our first fundraising round. And now email list at CoSchedule is over 400,000 people. I mean, we've built the business on email.
I love it. All right. Well, Garrett, thank you for joining us. Can you tell everyone listening today where they can go to learn more about you, CoSchedule, and everything you guys are up to?
Yeah, most active on Twitter myself. So at @Garrett_Moon, 2 R's, 2 T's, and Garrett, or at CoSchedule.com, of course, and CoSchedule.com/10xbook for the first chapter and some more information about the 10x marketing formula.
I love it. All right. Well, Garrett, thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
If you enjoyed this episode of The Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of The Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.